Hello, and welcome to Science World. This week, astronomers announced that they have spotted an ultra-compact dwarf galaxy some 60 light-years from Earth. A racetrack became a classroom for some Maryland students as they learned about science and engineering from open-top Indy race cars. And Sunday, September 29th, is World Heart Day. It's a special day set aside by global health officials to draw awareness to the world's two leading causes of death, cardiovascular disease and stroke. The president of the American Heart Association joins us today to talk about heart disease and how we can keep ourselves heart healthy. This and more are coming up for you on VOA's Science, Health and Technology magazine, Science World. Astronomers announced this past week that they have spotted an ultra-compact dwarf galaxy. Science World's Bob Doty tells us more.
The tiny galaxy is known as M60UC1, and its entire mass is contained within a radius of only 80 light-years, as compared to the radius of the Milky Way, which is more like 50,000 light-years. Since the dwarf galaxy is so tightly packed, the stars are about 25 times closer to each other than those in our galaxy. And its star density is about 15,000 times greater than the Milky Way. Researchers involved with the discovery say while it would still take hundreds of years to navigate from one star to another, it would be a lot easier to do so since the galaxy is so densely packed. Scientists are hoping that the M60UC1 galaxy, which is composed of some 200 million suns, can provide some clues on how galaxies have been able to evolve. The discovery of M60UC1 was made with NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, and follow-up observations were made with NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and ground-based optical telescopes. Researchers believe the galaxy is more than 10 billion years old, and that it has been stalled at this size for several billion years, and it is about 60 million light-years from Earth. For Science World, I'm Bob Doty.
The rooftop of a hotel in Thailand has been turned into an unusual farm for freshwater algae. Proponents tout the aquatic single-celled organism as a superfood. Steve Herman reports.
A chef in this Bangkok hotel is adding an unusual ingredient to numerous dishes found on the buffet. A nutritional algae, cultivated just steps away on the hotel's rooftop. The resident manager of Novotel on Siam Square, Manuel Raymondin, attests it provides both a healthy boost and an alternate source of protein.
It helps you to give you some energy, can replay the coffee. For the people who do not eat much of meat and are more like on a veggie side, it helps a lot because you know that you can replace it. You can replace it easily with a spirulina.
The hotel's spa also relies on the blue-green algae's anti-inflammatory properties for gooey therapeutic treatments. The project growing vitamin-rich cyanobacterium also has become a centerpiece for the hotel parent company's social responsibility mission.
It is a product which is easily lovable. When you see it, you basically adopt it, such as we did. Before we started the spirulina project, most of us didn't know really what it was.
A fledgling local for-profit enterprise introduced spirulina to the hotel based on its ability to grow in the center of urban Bangkok. These are starkly different surroundings from the ancient aquatic organism's natural habitat. Once only found in abundance in a few lakes in such places as the African nation Chad, Burma, and in Mexico, it now thrives in these bioreactors devised by American Derek Blitz. They rely on sunlight, circulating fresh water, and a bit of starter algae carried in laboratory test tubes from a Bangkok breeding ground.
We're pursuing hotels and other organizations that have empty rooftop space, and we can utilize that space to produce healthy food in the city for the residents of the city, and that organization can benefit from having access to that to use within their own businesses, as well as the perception of the public that they're doing something good.
Rooftops of high-rise buildings are ideal for this kind of farming. There's available and affordable space, and the sunlight and heat in cities such as Bangkok mean the crop grows quickly.
We could take and containerize the system and so it's ready to go and allow organizations to leverage our technology to develop food within communities that struggle.
Research indicates spirulina may aid sufferers of a host of ailments, including allergies and arthritis. But right now, production costs are too high to make this highly nutritious food affordable. In Bangkok, 100 grams of fresh spirulina costs $5, which means that it is mainly bought by people with ample expendable income who consume it as a nutritional supplement. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
It's time again for the Science World Quick Quiz. Sunday, September 29th is World Heart Day. It's a special day that was created to draw attention to cardiovascular or heart disease and heart health. Which of the following are considered to be major risk factors for cardiovascular disease? A, tobacco use, B, a bad diet, C, lack of physical activity, or D, all three previous answers? A, B, and C. Think about it and see if you can come up with the right answer. We'll reveal the correct answer in just a few minutes from now.
This is Science World on VOA. Be sure to visit our new website and blog at voanews.com/science.
A racetrack became a classroom for some Maryland students as they learned about science and engineering from open-top Indy race cars. Deborah Block has the story.
Indy cars go well over 320 kilometers per hour. The students got a close-up look at the cars before a recent Grand Prix race in downtown Baltimore. Then they went to tents by the race course to learn how tires grip the road surface. The students used a sensor to learn about friction by comparing smooth and rough materials. 10-year-old Janaydin Daughtry thought learning about the tires was interesting, especially because she is considering becoming an engineer.
The Indy car surface is smoother so that they can easily go around the streets, and the regular tire has grooves in it. So I guess it can go basically anywhere.
Now pull it and see what happens.
Science teacher Catherine Spivey says these activities show the students how what they're learning in school applies in the real world.
It gave them a chance to do science hands-on with equipment we can't afford to put in the classrooms. And they were able to see what we're talking about when we talk about being safe and friction and motion.
These children can learn a lot about science and engineering from Indy cars, says driver Ed Carpenter.
Everything that we do here with these race cars, and whether it's what keeps us safe in an accident or what's helping us go fast on track, you know, it's an engineering driven sport, which, you know, at the heart of it is math and science.
IndyCar sponsors the Future of Fast program with Project Lead the Way. The group provides science, technology, engineering, and mathematics course material to U.S. schools. The idea behind the demonstrations is to expose kids to new ideas, says Vince Bertram, head of the organization.
You know, it's one thing just to enjoy the speed and the track experience, but when you really start to understand the technical issues and how these cars are designed and put together, that's exciting and it's engaging for our students.
The children also got to learn about racetrack safety barriers. Using paper, styrofoam, straws, and glue, the students create their own small barriers. An instrument measures the wall force as the barrier is hit by a small car. Shane Gorman explains the result.
If you have it thicker rather than thinner, it makes a much better barrier.
It's soft.
Brennan Radke was surprised to learn that a real safety wall is not made out of concrete.
I think that if it was just a concrete wall, then the car would get like really demolished. But because it was made of styrofoam and the steel, I don't think it damaged the car as much.
The Future of Fast program began last year with events in several cities. The hope is that more children will get interested in science and engineering. And the IndyCar racing circuit hopes to gain some young fans. Deborah Block, VOA News, Baltimore.
Scientists have moved a step closer toward developing a universal vaccine against seasonal influenza, which can cause severe illness and occasionally death. Jessica Berman reports.
The process for developing a protective vaccine against the sometimes deadly viral infection is imperfect at best. The problem, say experts, is that drug developers are always trying to stay one step ahead of the pathogen as they attempt to predict which of a number of circulating viral strains is going to emerge as the dominant one that year. Currently, vaccines contain proteins from several strains designed to produce antibodies to stimulate a protective immune response. But the virus continuously mutates, so a vaccine cocktail is not effective after one flu season. Imperial College of London Chair of Infectious Diseases Ajit Lalwani says British researchers have drawn the blueprint for a universal vaccine against all varieties of influenza. Instead of stimulating antibody production, Lalwani says the new vaccine would ramp up the production of CD8 killer T cells, immune system cells that attack core influenza proteins, which are the same in all strains of the virus.
Such a vaccine would induce T cells that would be able to recognize new viruses that have not even been identified yet. In other words, future pandemic strains. In that sense, it's a universal vaccine. And it will be different to existing vaccination, where currently every year a new vaccine has to be developed, which is why we're always one step behind.
Lalwani and colleagues proved CD8 T cells could be used as the basis of a universal vaccine by recruiting some 350 staff members and students in the autumn of 2009 during the start of the flu pandemic. The participants donated blood samples and were given nasal swabs. Every 3 weeks, they answered questions about their symptoms. If they fell ill and experienced any flu symptoms, they used the nasal swabs and sent them to a laboratory for testing. Researchers found those with the most severe symptoms had the lowest T cell counts, while those who caught the flu but had very mild or virtually no symptoms had the greatest number of CD8 cells. Lalwani says this natural experiment provided researchers with the ingredients to make a universal flu vaccine.
Since we know what the components are, we know what T cell needs to be induced, we really have the design of the vaccine in hand. It's now a matter of producing it and carrying out clinical trials to confirm safety and effectiveness.
Lalwani predicts that a universal flu vaccine will become available within the next 5 years. An article on a universal influenza vaccine was published in the journal Nature Medicine. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
More than a year after a locust plague was declared in Madagascar, a control program finally is about to begin. Joe DiCapua reports.
Aerial and ground surveys are underway in Madagascar to map the locations of the Malagasy migratory locust swarms. Annie Menar is the locust response coordinator for the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. She's currently in Madagascar. Menar was among those who sounded the alarm over a year ago.
It is a plague, no doubt concerning that. It's a plague because numerous locust swarms escaped the outbreak area. The declaration of plague was made in April 2012.
Despite the announcement of a locust emergency, the response was slow to develop. That allowed the swarms to spread even further from the southwest, where they're endemic. The problem began several years earlier, when the last control program, funded by the African Development Bank, ended. The FAO launched emergency campaigns in 2010, 2011, and 2012, but they were not enough to stop the locust plague from developing.
What we did and what FAO does for many, many years is always to promote what we call preventive control strategy. Unfortunately, there are always some situations during which it is not possible to apply this preventive strategy, and progressively the local situation deteriorates, arriving at the level we have now.
Then, late last year, Menar says Madagascar's agriculture minister requested the FAO's help in developing a new spraying campaign. That is now scheduled to be conducted in three stages between October of this year and September 2016. The focus of the spraying will be on hopper bands, when the locusts are still wingless. Hoppers are more sensitive to pesticides that are less harmful to the environment, including those that contain a fungus. Besides spraying hoppers directly, pesticides will be used to create barriers or buffer zones. This is done by spraying the ground every 600 to 800 meters. It's estimated that of the 13 million people at risk, about 9 million are directly dependent on agriculture for food and income. In some regions, 70% of the rice and maize crops have been damaged. As the control program gets underway, the locusts are expected to move to the north, where the more productive agricultural lands are located. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Well, do you have the right answer to this week's quick quiz? Let's find out. Since Sunday, September 29th, is World Heart Day, our quick quiz today concerns risk factors for heart disease. Which of the following are considered to be major risk factors for cardiovascular disease? A. Tobacco use? B. A bad diet? C. Lack of physical activity? Or D. All three previous answers, A, B, and C? Okay, we gave you an easy one today. The answer, of course, is D, all three answers. Tobacco use, having a bad diet, and lack of physical activity or exercise are all considered to be major risk factors for developing heart or cardiovascular disease, something that could lead to a heart attack or stroke. Coming up on Science World, the president of the American Heart Association joins us to talk about heart health. Thanks for playing along with us on this week's Science World Quick Quiz. We'll have another brain teaser for you again next week.
You're listening to Science World on VOA. You can also find us on the internet. Our new webpage and blog can be found at voanews.com/science.
According to World Health Organization statistics, about 17.3 million lives each year are lost due to heart-related conditions. Health officials also speculate that the number of people dying of cardiovascular diseases will increase to 23 million annually by 2030. The World Heart Federation also estimates that at least 80% of the world's premature deaths from heart disease and stroke could be avoided if people were only able to control the major risk factors, such as tobacco use, unhealthy diets, and the lack of physical activity. To mark World Heart Day 2013, the president of the American Heart Association, Dr. Mary L. Jessup, M.D., joins us today for our one-on-one segment to talk about cardiovascular diseases and how we can all keep ourselves heart healthy. What is cardiovascular disease?
Cardiovascular disease is any disease of either the heart or the blood vessels that lead from the heart. And usually we talk about heart failure, a heart attack, stroke, and many people often talk about peripheral vascular disease, which causes claudication or painful walking. But all of those diseases are cardiovascular diseases.
What causes someone to develop CVD?
So the most common causes of cardiovascular disease is high blood pressure and smoking. There are other risk factors as well, including diabetes, high cholesterol, and even family history. So we can't control our parents, but we can certainly control whether we smoke or not, whether we control our blood pressure or not, whether we keep our weight at an ideal level so we don't become diabetic, and we can promote healthy living by more physical activity.
How is cardiovascular disease diagnosed?
There is a certain emphasis on being proactive or getting a regular health check every year. We ask patients to and people to know their numbers. So even if you don't think you have any symptoms of cardiovascular disease, you should know what your blood pressure is, you should know what your cholesterol is, You should keep in mind what your weight is. You should make sure you're exercising. But then you need a regular physical exam. We recommend that we start to measure blood pressures even in children during school, because hypertension or high blood pressure can begin at school age. But then we can measure cardiovascular disease by the risk factors that lead to that: high blood pressure, diabetes, smoking, abnormal lipids. When we talk about the actual symptoms, if people become more short of breath, if they start to get chest pain, if they're having recurrent headaches or a change in vision or a change in sensation that would suggest stroke, we urge people to get cardiovascular or special medical care as quickly as possible.
Can cardiovascular disease be cured or reversed?
Absolutely, and that's the good news. First of all, cardiovascular disease, for the most part, can be prevented. And what we now know, that if somebody can reach the age of 40 without any risk factors for cardiovascular disease, the likelihood is that they will live cardiovascular free of disease, probably for well into their 70s or 80s. So by just controlling risk factors, we can prevent cardiovascular disease. And even when the disease sets in, say somebody begins to have angina or somebody even suffers a small heart attack, we can certainly control that by proper medications, regular exercise, control of blood pressure. So there's lots of good news.
The World Health Organization says that heart disease and stroke are the top two leading causes of death worldwide. And some other alarming statistics: by 2030, it's expected that 23 million people will die from cardiovascular disease annually. Any idea of what's behind such grim statistics?
Well, I think that the potential for cardiovascular disease has always been there. But in years past, people died of infectious complications, women died in childbirth, and we've controlled so many of the other reasons why people die. So that now there has been a whole emphasis on non-communicable diseases. The communicable diseases were the infections, and the non-communicable diseases are cardiovascular disease and cancer. And so because there is so many people that smoke in this world, because so many people have high blood pressure that's poorly controlled, we have a growing obesity epidemic throughout the world, all of these reasons contribute to the growing incidence of cardiovascular disease.
And I guess the most important question and our final question today, Doctor, are what are some steps that people can take to improve their heart health?
Well, I think that's the most important question, and that is, if you smoke, stop smoking. Cut down on your sodium. Measure your blood pressure and find out if it's high. Measure your cholesterol and find out if it's high. Get on right medications. Check it regularly. Exercise regularly. Keep an ideal weight. Sounds like a lot, but there's such powerful prevention techniques.
That was Dr. Mariel Jessup, MD, President of the American Heart Association. That's it for this edition of Science World. Thanks so much for listening. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to visit our new website and blog. The address is voanews.com/science. Along with program information, you'll find stories, links, and much more. So stop by and visit us on the internet. The address again is voanews.com/science. Science World has been produced by Bob Doty, and I'm Rick Pantaleo. Be sure to join us either online or on your radio next Saturday and Sunday as we check out the latest in science, health, and technology on Science World.